Hello, welcome to The Canon, the show where every single week, Amy Nicholson of the LA Weekly and myself, Devin Faraci of Badass Digest, discuss classic movies and whether or not they belong in the canon of the all-time greats. We're going to have our say, we're going to argue back and forth about movies, and then we're going to turn it over to you, the listeners at home, and you're going to have a chance to vote and decide whose side you're on and whether or not today's movie makes it into the eternal canon. Last week, we talked about Goodfellas. Amy came out on the negative side. I was positive on Goodfellas. I want Goodfellas in the canon. We turned it over to you guys. You voted in the forums, and you overwhelmingly came out in support of Goodfellas. So Goodfellas is the first movie entered into the canon. Remember, you can vote every single week in the forums. You can find the forums on our wolfpop.com website. Log in, make a quick account, vote, and let everybody know whether or not you think this week's movie belongs in the canon. This week, we have a movie. I think this is going to be – we're going to probably just agree on this, I think, pretty easily. It is a great movie. It is a seminal motion picture in Hollywood history, and it is one of my favorite films, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Wow. Hold still while I rip out your heart, because you are a crazy person. I cannot stand any second of this movie, and I will kick it out of the cannon. I will shove it into a mining car, and I will throw it down a rail track.
Wow. That's a lot of hate. I guess let me start because I like it. So let's do that. I'll start because I like it, and then you can come with all of your incorrect arguments after that. I like to just – I feel like for the listener at home, if they're going to tune out, they should tune out after the right side speaks, and then they can just quit when the wrong shit happens.
Oh, wow. Okay. So hold on until after Devin's done talking, because then I'm going to say some truth.
So I feel like there are a lot of people who are really torn on Temple of Doom. You know, obviously it's the second film in the Indiana Jones trilogy, and I say trilogy because I don't think anybody really wants to count Crystal Skull. I think we can pre-decide that is not in the canon.
I think if you're going to count something as bad as Temple of Doom, you may as well just count Crystal Skull.
It came out in 1984. It's a really interesting movie in a lot of ways because it's one of the two movies that came out in 1984 that created the PG-13 rating. This movie was so dark and violent. This movie and Gremlins were both so dark and violent, both Spielberg movies, that the MPAA decided they had to create a new category, PG-13, to sort of go between the PG for kids and the R-rated for adults.
Thus creating a category that would make our summers boring forever.
Yeah. I mean, you can sort of make that argument, right, that the PG-13 has sort of become the middling ground of movies. You know, there's a lot of argument that this movie is really dark. And that the story goes that it came out of the divorces of its creators, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, and that these two men were going through terrible divorces and they had like a lot of issues. And I think – and both of them sort of have disowned the movie on some level. I think it's crazy. And I think that there is darkness in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, but that darkness is paid off in a really wonderful way. What I like about this movie is that it is a – it is like the shark from Jaws. It is a perfect and nonstop thrill machine. And it's not as good as Raiders. Right off the bat, I'm not even going to pretend this is as good as Raiders of the Lost Ark. Raiders of the Lost Ark is like a top 10 movie of all time.
Okay, and good, because I was about to take your pulse.
And the reason why we're not even talking about Raiders this episode, and we eventually probably will get to it, is because I think we both feel like, well, that's clearly the fucking canon, right? I mean, that's a perfect movie. But if you're going to make a movie that's a good time at the cinema. This movie doesn't have the depth that Raiders has, but I think that it has a clockwork precision that Raiders doesn't quite have. That's what I like about it. It's the ultimate thrill ride movie. And I feel like that gets used a lot as a negative, but here I think it's very much a positive. This is a movie that is perfectly paced, that from the opening credits lets you know this is going to be a heightened, crazy movie because it begins with a musical number and then it goes off into, I think, one of the best reversal action set pieces of all time as they fight over a diamond and over an antidote. And then it just keeps going from there. And for me, watching this movie is just – it's like strapping in and just going with the most incredible roller coaster of all time. And it's a beautifully, artfully constructed roller coaster. It has great darkness. It brings you down into the depths of hell and then brings you back out at the end in a place of happiness and feeling good. And it's the only prequel I have ever seen, I think, that actually functions properly as a prequel, because you see Indiana Jones go from a treasure hunter to a guy who gives a shit. which is what places him at the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark, because this movie technically takes place before Raiders. And I like that.
Okay. I need to jump in on a lot of what you're saying right now. Because you're using the phrase roller coaster like it's a compliment. I think it's actually a literal annoying insult. Because this film, the entire roller coaster of the ending, didn't feel like a movie to me. It felt like a, hey, you know what? We should really make a theme park ride at Disneyland. Let's just see what that theme park ride would look like. It feels like a pre-advertisement for what Indiana Jones was going to become. My problem with this movie isn't that it's dark. My problem with this movie is that it's dumb. It is dumb in a way that I think defies comprehension. What everything that Raiders got right, I think that Temple of Doom gets wrong. I mean, and I'm just going to jump in, because if we're going to talk about like the breakups that was going on, that were going on with Spielberg and Lucas at the time, you see that everywhere. I cannot imagine a film that seems to hate a female character more.
I will give you this. Willie is this one of the single worst female characters of all time, and coming on the heels of Raiders, with Marion is one of the great female characters of an action movie, it's a real bummer. It's
exactly.
A super fucking
this
bummer.
Only works as a setup to Raiders in that you understand why he was like, oh, thank God, Marion, I've got to really settle down with this one after what I've been dating. I mean, it's to me, it's such a bummer. Like the Indiana Jones that would fall in love with somebody like Marion here just seems like this idiot. He only seems to like Winnie because she's pretty, or Willing because she's pretty, and she only seems to think he would even like her because she's pretty. He's so mean to her up until the point when she puts on a beautiful headdress, and he's like, oh, okay, let's do this. I mean, fun fact, for a movie that like seems to very much hate women, the thing that had gone wrong in Spielberg's life is that his girlfriend at the time, they weren't actually married yet, they got married after this, his girlfriend at the time, Amy Irving, had temporarily broken up with him because she had an affair with Willie Nelson. And can we just say, Willie to Willie, there is some darkness in that.
Oh, I like that even better now. Yeah, look, I get it. Like, Willie is horrible. Kate Capshaw does not work. I get what they're going for. They're going for a really classic screwball 30s kind of a thing where he's the hard dude and she's the ditzy dame and they're going to find middle ground. And I get what they're going for. Unfortunately, the writing is not there and the acting is not there. I think Harrison Ford has it. I think that he has that classic 30s cool. I just think that Kate Capshaw does not have it. No. And she's just shrill as a result.
It's true. Like Sharon Stone was considered for this role, and I would have loved to see Sharon Stone's version of this. I mean, the movie that they've cited as an inspiration for her character was The African Queen, which makes zero sense to me. Because you have Katharine Hepburn in The African Queen, who when their boat goes down rapids, she's thrilled. She's like, that was great. Let's do that again.
I get what they're going for in the thematics of it, in that relationship. That's what they're going for. They fuck it up. I will give you that.
Yeah.
They fuck it up royally.
Here, every time anything goes wrong, Kate Capshaw just screams. It's terrible. She doesn't even want to like save Indiana Jones' life when the spikes are crashing on them because she's going to break another nail. She breaks so many nails in this movie. I mean, what annoys me about it is not just that she's an insulting character. As a blonde, I find her so insulting. I mean, one of her first lines is that she confuses mommies and mummies, and that is the sort of third grade joke that just makes me want to like beat my head against this microphone, except it would make a lot of noise.
You know, I'm really glad you said third grade because Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom is a third grade boys movie. And I think that's part of what I like about it. Look, there's no other way to say this. It's almost toxically misogynistic.
You say that like it's a good thing.
But it's toxically misogynistic in a third grade boy's way.
Oh, where girls have cooties?
Right. Where it's not about how awful women are. It's just about how their boys are afraid of women and they don't understand women. And that's the angle of misogyny here, which I feel like is a softer kind of misogyny than what we get in a lot of other movies.
He's not afraid of her? What are you talking about?
No, the movie is.
Yeah.
He's not. Because here's the thing. This entire movie is from Short Round's point of view. Despite the fact that the movie is shown through Indy's point of view, it's all about Short Round. This is all about being an 11-year-old kid. That's the whole movie about being an 11-year-old kid. That's the most vital thing to keep in mind, is that even though it's called Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, it's really about Short Round hanging out with Indiana Jones. That's why the darkest moment in the whole movie is when Indy hits Short Round, because it's about the betrayal of that father figure. So to me, that's the thing that's really interesting, is that Spielberg and Lucas, who are nerds, love Indiana Jones, but they can't identify with Indiana Jones because they're not cool dudes. They can't identify with Short Round, the kid who's hanging around, who's the sidekick. You know, and that's the whole reason why sidekicks were even invented in the original pulps and the comic books anyway, was to give the kids that were reading it an in. And so, you know, eventually in Batman and Robin, Robin became the identifying character. Short Round's the identifying character of this movie. You have to watch the entire movie with the idea this is an 11-year-old kid's perfect movie.
Yeah, well, we
and it's aimed exactly at that.
We didn't need that 11-year-old kid in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Why do we need it here? I mean, I could see why Spielberg couldn't relate to the Indiana Jones of that Raiders, who was amazing and smart and competent. What I think this movie does so wrong is that this Indiana Jones isn't nearly as intelligent as the last one. He doesn't outfox anybody. He doesn't outwit anybody. He just sort of blunders into things he has to escape from. He's not on the hunt for anything. He has no bone in this fight. He just keeps running into problems, then being like, oh, how am I going to get out of this?
Well, you know the main complaint about Raiders, right? Is that if Indiana Jones wasn't in that movie, the entire movie would have happened exactly the same. Because he doesn't do anything at the end. The Nazis destroy themselves. So there's nothing that he does. You take Indiana Jones out of that movie. So this is actually no different. Indiana Jones is actually more proactive in Temple of Doom because those kids would remain slaves and the Shankara stones would remain held by the thuggies if he had never shown up.
Which on its own is insulting, that the poor Indians have to have this like white savior guy show up so that they can get their own kids out of this prison.
Look, so
– and he doesn't even do it for the kids or on purpose. It just sort of happens.
It's about the softening of him. I mean, like, he begins with the fortune and glory thing. He's going to take the Shankara stone home and become rich and famous with it, and then eventually figures out that actually it's helping people that make the difference. So, look, I already gave you the fact that the film is toxically misogynistic, okay? And I will also give you the fact that the movie is absolutely racist. I mean, I'll give you both of these things.
Thank you. Okay, now continue to explain to me how you can think this is a good movie.
It's both racist and misogynistic, okay? And, you know, shit happens, man. Like, it is what it is. It's tough because they're trying to emulate a kind of a story that came from a period of exoticism, where it wasn't that other races or cultures were portrayed as bad. They were just portrayed as super fucking weird. And that comes out of an explorer culture that we're not in anymore. We live in a connected world where now you can go online and discover what Indian life is like. But like the stuff that this movie is riffing on, you know, the King Solomon's gold and stuff like that comes from the 1880s of Victorian explorer sensibility. And they're trying to riff on that. And so I'll give you that it is, through modern eyes, a terribly racist portrayal.
Okay, yes. But they even knew it was racist at the time because the government of India said, oh, wow, this is so racist. We will not actually let you shoot this in India. So the idea that they didn't even know it was racist until after the fact is complete nonsense.
No, they knew.
Because they knew and they just went for it anyways.
It's fun racist is what I like to say.
Oh, I'm fun racist?
It's fun
racist.
Is that a new thing? Yes.
I mean, but they're a real world.
It's lovingly racist.
One thing that the 1880s and the 1980s have in common is that they both didn't have the internet. I mean, there are stories from the time where professors really realized that their students thought Indian people ate bugs and snakes. These are a vegetarian people for the most part. I mean, this movie somehow confuses like the streets of Shanghai cuisine with India. Those things couldn't be further apart. I mean, it's not that.
Yeah,
but
how good is the eating the bug scene though?
That's so dumb. This movie isn't just racist. It's moronic in that. This movie didn't need that scene.
Oh, it 100% did, because this is a movie that's about it's about the child's gaze. It's about being 11 years old and you go to a weird dinner and this is like, you know, if you're you're a little kid at a table and they're serving you weird food and then in your mind it becomes bugs. That's like so fun and gross. It's so cool. It's so amazing. Like when they crack open the monkey head and they eat the brains, that is 100% the kind of things that my friends and I would sit around at the lunch table at school and pretend, oh, well, that's, you know, those are worms. You're going to eat the worms? And then it was great. It's a great make-believe fun thing. It's a movie that comes from the POV of a dumb kid.
Yeah,
and if you take it from that –
who wants to watch a movie and pretend you're a dumb kid? It doesn't need to be taken from that POV. I mean, I think that's the core problem of this. This is an Indiana Jones movie that doesn't even get what Indiana Jones is about. If you loved Raiders of the Lost Ark, if you loved Indiana Jones in this battered leather jacket, is the first thing you want to see in Temple of Doom is him dressed in a white tux like James Bond?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. That is one of my favorite parts of the whole movie because I don't want in Indiana Jones – and the series ends up just going here anyway, where he's – in this movie actually does it too, where his leather jacket is just his superhero costume. I like the idea that Indiana Jones can walk into any situation charmingly bumble his way through it. That's what I like about Indiana Jones. He was conceived as the American James Bond, so it makes sense to put him into that position for at least a moment.
Yeah, I mean, that this is Spielberg being mad he isn't directing a James Bond movie because it just has the look of it. Everything about it is fantasy, which to me is a problem because Indiana Jones is supposed to be tinily at least grounded in reality.
Oh,
you know, Indiana
I don't know
Jones
about
can
that.
Like fight people with sharks and, you know, giant crazy jaws and stuff like that. But you have a guy who actually like pursues real archaeological things. uses the name of real actual gods, goes to real places, and yet everything in it is so wrong that I think that's actually harmful.
But I think it's fantasy. I think that's the beauty of it's. This is like claiming that John Carter of Mars is harmful because
it's set on Mars, not India.
Right, but then but when we go to Mars eventually and have a colony, you go, well, this is a really big problem because it really portrays Mars as Barsoom is a real problem place.
Barsoom is fictional. India is real.
This isn't fictional India.
No, it's not a fiction. When everything else seems like largely sort of true, when you haven't read
nothing the fact in this that movie seems true. What in this movie seems true to you? What is the moment where you're like, this feels like a hard-edged drama?
Well, given everything that happened in Raiders, I think you're allowed to think that this is real.
That's a movie full of cartoon Nazis. I mean, like, nothing in Raiders feels real.
Yeah, okay, but Nazis were real people. Like, murderous, thuggy cults who tear out people's hearts? Not real.
Well, the thuggy cult was real.
The thuggy cult was real, but it was exterminated, like, 70 years before this movie was even set.
Well, that's actually part of the plot of this movie, is that, they have survived, and nobody believed it.
Yeah, but the thuggy cults didn't even do this. What they did is they kidnapped people on the roads when they were traveling across India and then just pretended to befriend them and then killed them and took all their stuff.
Well, I'm glad that somebody's standing up for the integrity of the thuggies right now. Yeah. The word thug literally comes from the thuggy cult. So I'm glad that you, Amy, are standing up for the murderous, kidnapping thuggies and claiming they were not portrayed properly in Indiana Jones and the Temple of
Doom. They at least did not tear out people's hearts.
That would have been so much fucking cooler, and the guy's still alive. That's the best part. That's the part where if you're watching this movie and if there's a moment where you are like, I feel like this could perhaps be an archaeological truth, and then he pulls out a guy's heart and the guy's still alive, and even Indy goes, he's still alive. This is the moment where you're like, oh, this is just fantasy. This is just escapism. This is just a good, fun, crazy time. I love it for that. I love it for that. This movie is exactly the experience of reading an old pulp that is written by a guy who doesn't know anything about the place that he's writing about, that is just a flight of fancy, that is just about excitement, just about action, just about adventure, and all told from the POV of a delightfully racist little kid.
Okay. See, what we really need to figure out here is why you think that is okay. I mean, Let's talk about the nature of fantasy, because I believe that movies can have fantasy. And I'm not arguing against the idea of a movie having fantasy at all. But I think when you have a fantasy, you need to have at least something grounded in reality here, the emotions of the characters. And that is not happening in Indiana Jones. There is no way in Temple of Doom that, like, a woman being shot at by Chinese people would care only about breaking a nail. You know, every beat where you have a moment where a character could actually have a human reaction to something doesn't happen in here. And as a result, that's the kind of thing that makes this movie spin totally off the rails. Is that none of Winnie's reaction or Willie's – I keep wanting to call her
Winnie
for some reason.
Yeah,
maybe because Willie is just such a strange name unless you're, you know, a country singer who bones Steven Spielberg's girlfriend. but all of her reactions to this, they have no bearing to anything happening around her. It's like she's living in this dumb bubble. And so when she's one of our conduits to fantasy – Then we're breaking that line. We don't.
She's
not.
She's an outside. She's. I mean, part of the movie's problem is that because it's so misogynistic, she's an outside character. She's a total cartoon as well. She's no more realistic than any of the Nazis in Raiders. So I feel like looking
God,
for Willie.
That's awful. Women and Nazis are looking, just treated the same.
Well, there's a woman Nazi in the next movie. So
yeah, she's at least smart and competent. I mean, she's played by Kate Blanchett.
I feel like looking at Willie. Oh, that's the fourth movie. No. She's a commie.
Oh, right. There's so many women and Nazis. I guess they're just the same.
Looking at Willie as your grounding mechanism is a real fucking mistake.
Yeah, but
you've already
she is.
Walked into this movie with the exact wrong idea.
Well, no, but she is.
The opening
in
scene
that
of this movie is her walking out of this giant dragon's mouth singing. This is the moment the movie says, you know, we're just going. There's no reality here. This is a musical.
Yeah.
This is all big.
Okay, but if you're going to talk about the dinner scene with the Indians eating monkey brains, that whole thing is shown through her perspective. That's the first moment in the movie where we're
Short
actually on her side. No, it's hers. She's the one who's hungry. She's the one that's freaking out. She's the one that tries to get a bowl of soup and it ends up having eyeballs in it. That's the only time that's in the movie where we're like, oh, okay, I'm kind of on Willie's side about this.
Well, this is one of the times where they're trying to humanize her poorly. They're trying to humanize her a little bit. You know what's really cool about that scene is that Willie and Short Round are having their own little movie because they're getting served all this disgusting food, and Indiana Jones is busy arguing with the Maharaja's right-hand man, and he's having no food served to him at all. So we never have to see how Indy reacts to having a beetle placed in front of him.
And then somehow when it like pans around the table, other people look like they're eating normal food, like stir-fried pork.
Why, that might just be because the extras were not going to be eating bugs.
Well,
I suspect is how that might have
been. I would like to be an extra. Okay, if we're going to talk about that scene too, problems with it, here's my problem. This movie cost $8 million more than Raiders of the Ark does, and it looks so cheap. That monkey head looks like they just bought it at the dollar store in the Halloween gift section.
Oh, that monkey head's so cool looking. Somebody just created a mug based on that monkey head that I want to buy. It's $70, though.
You have the biggest mug collection. Who needs more mugs, Devin? How many mugs do you have?
I could have more mugs. It's not cheap. It's – what's the word I'm looking – it's
tacky?
It's handmade.
No, it's not handmade.
It's an
artisanal. Every single monkey head looks exactly the same.
It's
the
an artisanal.
Plate of them.
It's an artisanal motion picture.
Oh my god!
Everything
with
is tactile.
Cocktail inside.
I love it. I love the practicality of everything in here.
What in this? This entire thing was basically shot on a soundstage. This movie.
Yeah, it's
looks,
practical.
It looks 10 times more fake than anything in Raiders of the Lost Ark. When they're out on the cliff, that looks fake.
Mm-hmm.
When they're like running through the streets of Shanghai in the car, that looks fake. This movie looks so cheap. It looks like they lost $8 million.
It looks like they
were
shooting a movie in the 30s and they were shooting it all in Burbank.
Oh my God,
you're
going to pretend that makes this good? They're shooting a movie in Burbank because India was like, your movie is so racist. No, go away.
Oh, I love it.
I want to know what happened to the Sri Lankans that they were like, oh, okay, cool. India thinks this movie is racist. Come
and shoot
some stuff here.
They're starving. Are you kidding me? Oh, good Lord. They shoot anything there. No, I love that cheap look. I love that. To me, watching those old jungle pictures of the 30s, and they're quite clearly on the Warner Brothers lot, is part of the charm to me because it's not real. It's not supposed to be real. And to me, the idea that you're walking in and you're expecting a movie that has deep human emotion or that has some kind of realistic archaeology and or has the feel of being a true shot-on-location thing, except for a couple of shots.
All things that made Raiders a great film.
But this isn't Raiders. This is different.
Why
this isn't
couldn't
just
it
Raiders
be as good
all
as
over
Raiders?
Again.
Yeah, it should have been as good as Raiders. I mean, I like that you're getting yourself into this corner where you're trying to say that the fact that it's racist, misogynistic, and looks cheap is actually a good thing.
They're all
that
the
is
best parts. They're all the best parts. They're all the best parts of this movie. And I don't want it to be Raiders all over again. I like the fact the idea in the original trilogy, each of these films felt real different. And I like that a lot, that this was the one that felt the most like the serials. Because the whole thing when Raiders came out and Star Wars came out, the whole big thing was this is a throwback to the serials, which is really funny because Lucas and Spielberg were both too young to have really enjoyed the serials. They just caught them on Saturday morning TV. So they were nostalgic for a thing that wasn't even of their era. But anyway, Temple of Doom is the only one of these movies that feels like it's truly a serialized experience because it has that structure of peak, a little bit of a valley, cliffhanger, peak, a little bit of valley, cliffhanger, and it has those production values and it has those really troubling racial and gender things which you find in all of the serials. Now, I get it. These are not ideal. We don't want this in the modern day. I totally get it. And nobody should ever do this again. But as a last hurrah for this kind of stuff, this is the most fun way to do it. I'm going to stop here and take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and you're going to continue to tell me why you're so wrong about Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. All right, so you were saying that you have a problem with racism and sexism, which I think is ridiculous. So let's continue on that.
Okay. Well, I think what we should do for a second is try to play devil's advocate. I'm going to try to think of something to compliment about this film, and it's going to be really, 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 really hard. Okay, I love Busby Berkeley. I do love the fact that there's a Busby Berkeley movie in a picture aimed at little boys.
Yeah.
I do love the Indiana Jones ride that exists at Disneyland, so I do love that. I do like this movie for making me posthumously think, okay, Crystal Skull wasn't that bad of a film, and that it exists in the same universe as this. Okay, and I think I'm out. I can't think of anything else I like about Temple of Doom. Oh, and I do like the fact that it did give me nightmares about the guy getting his heart ripped out for, you know, until I was like,
so
24.
That's so cool. That is so cool. And so this is what I like about.
Now I want to hear. I mean, can you see anything that?
Yeah, I'm gonna get off the ropes, off the defensive on this sexism and racism stuff, and I'm gonna tell you why this is a really terrific movie. One reason is because it. I said already it's an ultimate boy movie, but what I like about it is that it's small. This is a thing you had complained about with it being cheap, but I like that Raiders of the Lost Ark was a life or death for the entire world. He's saving the world. This is a real small movie. This is indie. This is what indie's life is like every day. We just happened to find a movie that – we happened to find a story that this is just – he's going to come. He's going to crash a plane. He's going to get in this adventure. He's going to go to Delhi. When he gets to Delhi, he's probably going to find another adventure, and then he's going to travel the world that way. And this is a small movie that's about Indiana Jones, the person. And it takes him from being a treasure hunter to a guy who cares about people. And it's sort of this story of how he stops being just the fortune and glory guy and turns into the guy who's willing to save the entire world at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. I like that a lot. And I like that smallness of it, because it is too easy in movies to go with saving the whole world. But Indy has a lot of adventures. And this is a lot – well, this movie's a lot of fun because more than even than Raiders, this movie has like a lot of little references. That guy who's helping him in the dinner at the beginning is like, Indy, we've gone on many adventures, but now I go on the greatest adventure of all, and I go before you. And as he's dying, I love that. Like, there's like the idea that these guys have had all these other adventures, and they're all like this.
You mean the guy who gets shot in the opening scene, who he never seems to care about ever again? But, oh, cool, my buddy died. Anyways, whatever.
He's just got to keep going. I don't want to, you know, there's some movies where you want the characters to stop and have like a moment, and there are some movies where you want them just to keep going on, and this is one of those movies.
I disagree with that. I disagree with that so much. And I disagree with this idea of the smallness. I think the smallness is one of the problems. I mean, when you go to an Indiana Jones movie, you want to see a giant globe-trotting adventure. Think about all the places he goes to in Raiders. He goes from Germany. He goes to Egypt. He goes everywhere. This movie, he goes to, like, he leaves Shanghai, gets waylaid in India, then just spends the entire movie underneath the one palace he went to. It's so claustrophobic. You don't get any sense of the world at all.
I know. I get that. I mean, for me, that works, though. Again, it's just because this was at a time when we thought we were going to have 20 Indiana Jones movies. So therefore, to me, it was like, well, this time we're just going to go one place. And the next time we'll go to seven different places.
Yeah, and even how he gets to that one place is so bad. He, like, wanders into Kate Catchell's room, grabs the boobies on a statue. And it's not even like he's like, hey, I want to go rescue some kids. He just grabs some boobies and he's like, oh, it's a trap door. Let's go see what's in
here. You are misrepresenting this. They had attempted to assassinate him. He goes into her room because he thinks that she's the next target of assassination. And then he can't figure out how the assassin got into his room. So he assumes there must be a hidden door.
Well, why doesn't he look for the boobies in his room?
Because he went there first to go help
there's
her.
There's no reason why he would think an assassin sneaked into his room. He just walks into his room and the assassin's already there.
Because the assassin didn't kill him earlier or did not kill Short Round earlier when Short Round was in the room sleeping. So clearly the assassin was not there the whole time. Yeah. The assassin clearly snuck into the room.
No, I don't think so at all.
This movie's too smart for you is the problem.
No,
it needed to hold your hand and let you know how this stuff all worked.
Oh my god, it can't hold my hand because it would squeeze it so hard and I'd break a nail and then I'd scream.
Look, it's just telling the truth about blondes. It's very hard for you to have a movie that is so honest about blondes.
Okay, and here's what I have to say. Kate Capshaw is a brunette who had to dye her hair for this role. The idea that she is representing blondes makes me so upset. But okay, no, here's another creepy thing about the fact that he goes into that room and, like, squeezes the boobs. Like, that's the whole build-up to their, like, weird, are we going to sleep together or not thing. And never in there is there acknowledged that if they pick his room, they're going to have sex next to Short Round. How creepy is that?
I don't know. I think Short Round probably would have liked it. I think also what you're missing –
and why doesn't Short Round even help him when the assassin, like, starts strangling him? Short Round is sleeping, like, 20 feet away. He doesn't notice.
Well, I actually like that Short Round sleeps through much of that. That his life is so crazy that it takes an awful lot to wake this kid up. I like that a lot.
Okay, and can we say that this is a movie that's supposed to be against child slavery, but yet Indiana Jones just has a little child slave. He makes do all his driving.
He's his buddy.
His buddy.
That scene where they're playing cards is such a great scene because it establishes the equality of these two because they're both cheating at cards. And I love that scene so much because it establishes Short Round, despite being a kid, is Indy's equal. And Indy takes him seriously as a person.
Okay, do you think Indy pays him, gives him a cut? What do you think happens here?
I think Short Round was a kid whose parents died. We established this in the Japanese bombing of Shanghai and who has been on the streets stealing. And so I think that his life is probably better globetrotting with Indiana Jones, having adventures.
And possibly getting murdered all the time.
Well, you know what? He lives in the streets of Shanghai stealing. His possibility of dying is probably just as high, except now he's actually seeing things, going places, eating, you know, sometimes good food, sometimes bugs. I think he's – any 9-year-old boy would want to be Short Round. That's the whole point of that character is every boy in the audience wants to be Indiana Jones' best friend. And that's why he's a great, great character.
I don't want to be this Indiana Jones' best friend. This Indiana Jones is a moron.
This is a boy movie. This is not for you. I think that's
I'm only 51% of the population.
That's okay.
So I'm supposed to be happy that this movie doesn't care about me at all?
I'm just saying. Sometimes it's for the boys.
You cannot play that card. That is the weakest card.
The other thing that you're missing about this movie is that it is a masterpiece of construction. And let's just step away from all of the narrative stuff, right? Which is
so thin. Let's step away from the, like, one sentence plot summary that this entire movie is.
The thing is that
the
Steven
complicated
Spielberg,
narrative of characterization in this film.
Look, cinema isn't just about story, okay? Cinema is about more than it's about how you tell the story. And Spielberg is one of the master filmmakers of all time. And in Temple of Doom, he has taken a thin story as an excuse to create some of the greatest set pieces of his career because they're not as spectacular as other ones, but they are just so well constructed. And what he does with this movie that I love is he creates a Hitchcockian level of tension within these scenes. Because every one of these scenes, he doesn't have surprises. There's always a thing that you are up against. So like a good example is the scene where Indy is fighting the really big guy on the conveyor belt on the rock crusher. It's a constant thing where they're constantly getting closer to the rock crusher. It's a constant series of reversals. The reversals are really well executed. It's all super clear. It's all super exciting. It's a lot of fun. And that has that ticking clock that is always going. You know, that's the thing that Hitchcock said is better to show the bomb under the table than have the bomb just explode. This movie is nothing but bombs under the table. Every single scene, we're always aware that there is a danger that our characters are trying to get out of. They're constantly reversing that danger. That scene of Willie in the pit as she's about to be lowered into the lava is a really good example of we're on top, we're on the bottom, we're on top. And it's just so well executed. I mean, let's set aside –
that's all that it is.
But isn't that enough sometimes to go to the movies and just to have something that's so well executed that it's just so perfectly wound? You don't go – not every single Sometimes it's the storytelling, not the story. Not every song has got to have the most amazing lyrics, but if it's an intricate and beautiful melody, and I think this is an intricate and beautiful bit of set piece storytelling. I think that overcomes some of the sort of more basic stuff. If the movie was more complicated on a narrative level, these set pieces would not be able to flourish in their own way. And every single set piece is a little minor masterpiece of storytelling.
I think it goes too far. I think you have wonderful set pieces like this in Raiders, and nothing like that here. If the film was a neutral in terms of its like ethics and morality, then the set pieces would maybe bump it up an inch. But the fact that the movie is already starting at a negative, it doesn't even get to like parody on this. I mean, watching the last 40 minutes of this when absolutely nothing happens except for just running is so frustrating. I think if you type down every line of dialogue in the last 40 minutes of this, it would just be a lot of run, duck, run, shoot. It would just take up one page of commands. There's nothing happening in here that it all has anything to do with
character. There is a troubling moment in the minecart chase where the movie opens the door towards the rest of the 80s Amblin movies. And the rest of the 80s Amblin movies this is my imitation of the rest of the 80s Amblin movies. And there's
wow.
A lot of that.
You guys can't see this, but Devin just turned around and pulled his pants down and then smacked his own ass a lot.
There's a lot of that. And that is a troubling moment. But I can't blame the movie for what came after the movie. And I feel like if you're watching movies in a continuity of history to understand at the time that, yes, this movie has got insensitive stuff going on, but the 80s were like a weird transitional period for our insensitivities. You have to just say, this is what it is. This is what it is. We can't.
But they just knew what it was before it even had to happen. I mean, Spielberg tried to ask Lawrence Kasdan if he would write the script for this. And Lawrence Kasdan said, I didn't want to be associated with Temple of Doom. I thought it was horrible. It's so mean. There's nothing pleasant about it. And the movie is very ugly and mean-spirited. They knew this was about. Do you know who ended up, fun fact, who ended up writing Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom? The screenwriters, Willard Huck and Gloria Katz, the next movie they did after Temple of Doom, this grand masterpiece, was Howard the Duck. I mean, I almost think I could just end my argument there.
Look, it's not the best Indiana Jones movie by any means.
Shocking. Really? You know who did think it was the best Indiana Jones movie? And this upsets me so much. Because she's my idol, Pauline Kael. She loved this movie. She could not stand Raiders. I find that so bewildering.
I get why Pauline liked it. Because it is a movie that exists totally on the surface. And it is a movie that is a very immediate movie. I mean, it's tough because so many of the things that make this movie work are things that we have decided are negatives in our movie going experience. And I think being a thrill park ride is a reasonable thing for a movie to be if it is an exceptionally well constructed one. Movies can be different things. Movies can be deep emotional experiences. Movies can be twisty narrative experiences. And movies can be, if well done, and these are hard to do right, just propulsive thrill rides. And this one, I think, is a propulsive thrill ride really well done.
But even when it's propulsive, it's misguided. I mean, let's talk about the absolute ending, the rope bridge scene. You have
love it.
Oh, no, you have Indiana Jones on this rope bridge being attacked on both sides by the thuggies. He manages to communicate in a look that takes like a 45-second look to Willie and to Short Round that they should hold on because
he says something in Chinese to Short Round. He says something in Chinese.
Yeah, but none of the guys
says,
actually. Yeah, none of the guys. Hold on!
But he says it in Chinese.
Yeah, none of the thuggies actually understand that this is happening. They have to cut the rope bridge before anybody realizes that's what's going on, which they should have realized at least to hold on, you know, like seconds before this. And then how it really ends isn't just that Indiana Jones saves the day, because this Indiana Jones is completely incompetent. It's when a bunch of British people show up with guns. It's like, cool, this one white savior didn't do it that well. Let's just send like a dozen of them and we'll just outshoot them because they only have swords.
Technically, it's one British guy and he's got an Indian regiment with him. That is super fucking troubling though. And that is the movie, the whole movie, I was like rolling with the racism, and then this happened on this rewatch and I was like, oh shit.
Like, this movie was banned in India. How are you supposed to roll with banned? Not just they couldn't shoot there, banned in India.
Well, I don't like that kind of censorship, so I'm against India anyway. So good. I'm glad they made fun of India because their censorship is uncool to me. Is that better?
I guess so.
But no, I get it. No, that last bit is that is a bridge too far. That British guy should have been killed in – this is how to make the movie better. If the British guy was killed, if it was his heart that was ripped out, this would have then become a movie about colonialism. By avoiding that and making it a movie that celebrates colonialism because the colonials save the day, it does end up with a pretty sour taste.
It's true. I mean, even at the time, the actor Roshan Sheth, who plays Chatter Lai, says, you know, I have to say this, Indian people are very embarrassed when they see one of their own playing roles like that. You know, he basically had to apologize. And he was a British stage actor, by the way, Chatter Lai, who plays like kind of the posh, more like educated one. They put him in brown-faced. It's just so creepy.
Look, let's take one more break and then we'll come back and we will decide whether or not Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom belongs in the canon. I've made a lot of really good arguments. You've made some noises with your mouth.
Yeah, just like a Kate Capshaw.
Just like have you broken any nails this time, Amy?
I will when I claw your face after this.
You know, so here's the thing where it gets complicated. I really like this movie. I really enjoyed it. And I really stand up for this movie as an entry in the Indiana Jones series. I think it's the second best. Raiders is the best. Crystal Skull is a fucking nightmare. And, you know, Last Crusade, I can go either way on Last Crusade. I really loved watching this movie. I had a great time watching it. It was a lot of fun. It's thrilling. It's funny. It's silly. And it perfectly encapsulates a third grade boy's interests to me. And as an increasingly old man, I liked being transported back to that feeling. And it really made a big difference. However, it is hard for me to say this belongs in the canon, if only because Raiders of the Lost Ark is so much better. And while this is a really expertly made movie that I will watch all the time, I cannot in good conscience vote for this to be in the canon.
Okay, that's the most sensible thing you've said all day. Because I think Temple of Doom is racist, sexist, offensive, and above all, badly written, badly plotted, with zero spark and zero energy. Its moral offenses are equaled by its narrative offenses. And honestly, you don't even just have to take my word for it. Let me use the final vote here. Let me use my final statement by referring to Mr. Spielberg himself, who said, I wasn't happy with Temple of Doom at all. It was too dark, too subterranean, and much too horrific. There is not an ounce of my own personal feeling in Temple of Doom. And just for his sake, I'm going to say wholeheartedly, get this movie out of the canon. It does not deserve to be in there at all.
So now we turn to you at home. What do you think? I know a lot of you guys are probably actually going to come to the defense of Indiana Jones, the Temple of Doom, as I did. I think that Amy is being really harsh. I think that Spielberg's being really harsh on it as well. I think that it's just a super well-constructed movie. I think that it's not one of the greats, but boy, is it put together right. So you guys at home, what do you say? Vote in the message boards, and we'll let you know how it went next week. And speaking of next week, we have the results in from the previous episode, and it turns out Bing.
You can't keep sneaking in final lines, you jerk.
We
have an agreement.
I am a jerk.
You're such a jerk.
Well, I'm gonna outro it now, and you can sneak in a final line while I outro it. All right, guys, thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week, and as always, with me will be Amy Nicholson of the LA Weekly.
Yes, the voice of reason. Thank you.
And I am Devin Faraci of Badass Digest. And next week, we're going to be talking about Romeo plus Juliet, the Baz Luhrmann adaptation of William Shakespeare's classic movie. And I think you're going to be surprised where we come down on that one. Pop.
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 Wolf Pop is part of Midroll Media, executive produced by Adam Sachs, Matt Gourley, and Paul Scheer.